this is Kristen and Sitlali for History and Pop Culture. We want to welcome you to this program today. Say hi.
Oh, hi. It's me, Sitlali. We're back, and we are going to be talking about one of historians' favorite subjects, which is the History Channel.
Oh, yes. The History Channel and its non-history presentation.
Maybe it's one of our favorite topics among historians, because I think, in a way, we all had, better hopes for it, that it would be some way that all the things that we enjoy doing would be put into a television format, and now our hopes have been dashed, so we spent a lot of time complaining about it. So we thought we'd talk about it today, and rather than just complain about it, but actually, look at some of the shows and think about why we hate it, whether or not we've been justified in our hatred of it, and some of the background that other people have done on the History Channel too.
So basically today we will discuss the channel itself. We'll look at some of the critiques of it, some of the programs that are on the show, and just kind of discuss what historians kind of have a bit of an issue with, kind of what the programming is aimed toward, and also looking at a couple of the shows specifically. So let's take a look first at the channel itself.
So it's been around for about 20 years now, started in 1995, right? That's 20 years. And it's on the A&E channel on cable. So, and also, of course, you can check, they have a website, and it's, which I thought was going to be more exciting. It has a few little history quizzes and things like that, but they're poorly maintained, I'd say, and not as exciting as I thought they could be.
And like all pop culture things that we reference in this show, whether it be television or movies, it definitely has basically its target audience, which is predominantly a male audience. And you can kind of see that in their programming itself and who they, what the type of shows are like. It's basically owned by A&E Networks, which is owned by Disney and the Hearst Corporation. So you can kind of see what the type of history, who the artists are, right? Who are the producers of these shows? So kind of has those type of themes and focus.
Right. I mean, I think the fact that it's a business, of course, makes a huge amount of difference in terms of how they organized the channel. Initially, it began really with just a focus on bringing in a lot of British-funded shows, and those for PBS and that kind of thing. So, a lot of period dramas and a lot of programming on World War II. That has changed over time, but, of course, World War II is always popular, and that hasn't entirely disappeared from the programming.
So originally it looked at documentaries and historical fiction, but then has since kind of, devolved, I would say, into these kind of pseudo-documentaries and reality TV programs, as those have become much more popular, basically during, the turn of the 21st century. So we see a lot more reality programs on the History Channel now, and a lot less history.
Right, and I think, too, I should mention that people were excited about it, historians were excited about this channel, and we always look to new shows being produced because I think that it's exciting to have at your fingertips for scholars and teachers and professors the chance to show students documentaries, and let me tell you, to get them through the university is more work. But to have everybody be able to watch these shows perhaps would bring an element to history that's very visual, right? And everyone will say that, being able to learn history through a visual medium like television or video videos on YouTube, I should say, we always consider that more exciting. And I think the students do too.
Right. And to just have somebody lecturing at you kind of rote learning dates has kind of become a popular and definitely harder to learn and keep history in mind. So to have graphs and videos and movies and kind of to give, more of a three-dimensional part to history is always something that a historian or a professor or a teacher is always looking for to incorporate in their lectures. So the hope with the History Channel, it was there, but now it's hard to find history on it.
Right. And I should also say that I think we consider modern generations to be visual learners more because of the way that which we've interacted with television and video content. So there's an effort to bring that into the classroom even more. And, you know, it's interesting. I've noticed with my students that they largely mention that they're visual learners. So I think that they're contrasting with, like, a lecture style, like you said, like kind of rote learning from memorizing facts and such. So I think that the possibilities are exciting about the History Channel. So that's why we want to look at it and see what we thought of some of the major shows. One of the ways in which the History Channel has been considered by many people is to be all Nazis all the time.
Right. It is definitely focused more and more on World War II, and particularly Nazis, and really, I guess, how the war has really impacted society since. So, I mean, that's probably why there's such a focus on it, is just the impact of World War II in the 20th century.
I feel like, and I don't even know if they hit the impact as much as they talk about, well, maybe like in terms of the technology, right, like military technology, but definitely the fact that it's focused on not just World War II in like a really broad sense, but very much like the Nazi, like this, and this kind of obsession with perhaps like a good guy, bad guy scenario that World War II created for us. But because, like you said, the channel is focused on a very male audience, the emphasis is on weaponry, is on battles, is on the overall kind of military strategies. That's, I mean, whenever I talk to non-historians who watch the History Channel, that's what they remember. And they expect me to know, and I do not know much about military strategy, I have to say, because I do not watch the History Channel nearly enough, apparently.
So let's kind of talk about, like, just generally some of the, if you're not familiar with the History Channel, some of the actual shows. So I kind of broke it down a little bit into different themes that I saw on the programming when I was looking at online at what their programming is like. And like we said, there's a lot of stuff on World War II and military history. So shows such as the Third Reich, Hunting Hitler, a whole bunch of those types of shows. We also have a lot of stuff on ancient history, but usually in the form of alien encounters, because for some reason, people in the ancient world were not smart enough to build their own buildings.
Yeah, there's a lot of interest that anything that was complex to create, and they were like, well, they didn't have real engineers like we do today, how could they have created them? Thus, it was alien encounters. Yeah, that's interesting.
So like ancient aliens and, you know, building the pyramids and that kind of thing. There's also a lot of focus on conspiracies, so like shows on 9/11 conspiracies, fact or fiction, angels and demons, Decoded, a lot of these type of...
Angels and demons, Decoded?
I think it has something to do with that whole Dan Brown...
The Da Vinci Code.
The Da Vinci Code stuff. Okay. So it's like...
Which, yeah, like a lot of
conspiracies. There are also a lot of marathons of historic serials, so like American History, The Story of Us, which is another thing that they had going on for a while. Just kind of breaking down American history into chunks, which could
have
been...
What side of American history, though?
I don't know. I saw it a couple of years ago on television, but they also have reality show, like we talked about, like American Pickers, Pawn Stars, a lot of stuff on like finding history, digging out history out of things,
right,
as well as kind of a focus on technology and science, such as Modern Marvels. There is some American history, particularly focus on individuals like Lincoln or Andrew Jackson. And then finally, stuff on disasters, such as mega disasters and some of these other like the apocalypse type disasters and things. So,
well, it's interesting because all those seem like things that are popular in television in general, right? I mean, maybe not the conspiracy so much, but the disasters. Those sound like disaster movies, right? Like San Andreas or... What was the other one? The one about the Mayan prophecy, 25 or something. What was it?
2012.
Like all
like
those
that,
movies.
Yeah.
And then reality shows, those are always popular, I think, because it gives people a sense that they can be a part of popular culture. You know, you feel like it's you. You could be there because you look just like them or something, right? The conspiracies, those are usually for YouTube, but I could see how... It might make it for, give you a lot of programming because there's a lot of conspiracies out there, right?
And I mean, these are just also like historic conspiracies, like, so what happened to JFK and like all of the government cover-ups and that type of thing. So I think that has become definitely popular throughout the 20th century. So they
and
do
to be
talk
fair,
about that.
Conspiracies are fascinating, but I'm guessing they don't explore what it means. What the meaning of these conspiracies are so much as it actually explores them. But I can see how people be drawn in by that, like, because conspiracies are entertaining for many people.
So basically, we also want to talk about, our main question is, why do historians care about this? Why is this particular channel so discussed among academia, and like, why is it important?
So a lot of the, we looked at some research that had been done, some articles that have been written in academic journals about the History Channel, and it was interesting because we looked at both articles by Americans and British, and the British, and the British were concerned that they felt like Hollywood had hijacked history, right? Because that was not, it's not billed as U.S. History Channel, it's billed as like all history, right? So if the Americans are doing that, then all of a sudden American history becomes everyone's history, especially for people who are English language, right? But I think there's a Spanish version of it too, but it's still the same shows, right?
These little branch channels like H2 and History International.
Ah, okay. Which we could look at, but we haven't yet. And then also too that there's a concern with scholars that instead of focusing on like these bigger questions of like, what is the argument, which would be like, say, you know, like, what are the impact of World War II, or why did World War II happen in the first place? It's more about like a narrative, which is like telling a story. And in telling that story, you lose that the big arguments that are still happening in the field. Like, people haven't decided that this is the one answer. There's some things that have been decided, but many questions still remain. And if you focus only on the narrative, it could be like a lack of critical thinking for people, right? That people would think this is already done and decided, and there's no challenges within the field. You know, people aren't debating it, and I think that's one of the concerns we have.
And in looking at like some of these types of programmings, you get a lot of sensational approaches to history. You focus on really the main discussions of history, as well as like the fringe discussions of history. So, you know, this event happened with all of this goriness and all of this like controversy, and nothing is normal. And you got a lot of fringe, you know, particularly with the conspiracy people, like, this happened and this is fact, as opposed to, well, not the mainstream interpretations of history. More
like
of like,
pretty, like, you said, like, I think you're, I mean, it sounds to me like you're saying that it's very extreme. Like, it's either like, here's the extremely like old school version of World War II, and then here's like these extreme conspiracies, but as if nothing happens in between, right?
Like for instance, like with Hitler, like, okay, mainstream, he died at a bunker, or controversy, conspiratorial, he escaped to Argentina and lived into the 60s.
Right. Which gets us to our next show, which we saw, which was Hunting Hitler, that we actually watched to get a sense of one of the most popular shows, it seems, because, I mean, it is, History Channel isn't the only place that talks about Hitler and has really weird ideas of what, alternative versions of what either happened to Hitler or what we wish would have happened. I'm thinking of, like, Inglourious Basterds, too. And now this show, I thought, had some of the problems that many historians complain about, which is because it used, like, a documentary style, it could make it seem to the public like it was all true. Right, when you see something in a documentary style, it gives off this sense of realness, right? They also, I think the show relied on like a tricky use of language, and they would say things like, so if we see these stairs built from stone, then it's very clear that it could have been Hitler, right? So they'll say something really definitive and then really weak. And if you aren't listening carefully, you might think, oh, that's true, right? This is clearly Hitler then, right? Who lived in this bunker in Argentina.
Right, and these people are out to, I'm not going to say these people, but these particular individuals involved with the show are out to challenge the history.
Right.
They don't necessarily present what the main argument about Hitler, mainly that he died in 1945, is. They don't talk about that. They're like, okay, well, he didn't. We'll go off of that basis, and let's go look for evidence to prove that he didn't die.
And it's interesting because it left me with the question of why. Why the desire to have this version of Hitler? I mean, maybe it's something to be angry about, that we could feel like maybe we didn't win as decisively as we would have liked, or I don't know. I mean, is this, I guess I get it more with Inglourious Basterds. Like, I think there was a desire to have the chance to murder him at American hands, you know, rather than his own hand, perhaps. But with these shows, I feel like maybe it's just this idea that Hitler's just such a fascinating figure that we can't let go of it. And there's got to be a new way to approach him. So let's approach it now with these really weird conspiracies.
Well, I think maybe it ends up being that it brings up the question of, did the governments actually lie and cover up the fact that he's still alive? Is there something out there? Are we need to question the government in its release of information. So they say he died. Well, maybe he didn't. So maybe they lied to us.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, there's definitely like a there's almost like constant obsession with the government's always lying to us. Yeah, that's true. I mean, you kind of have to wonder at what point then are you just going to be constantly paranoid? But I guess they are. So that's one of the things we noticed with Hunting Hitler, the show about trying to find if Hitler had somehow gotten to Argentina and lived a regular life.
In the jungles.
Yeah, in the jungles. And they found buildings, old ruins that had like Nazi paraphernalia. So thus, they would just completely extrapolate from there. Like, be like, oh yeah, so there was Nazi paraphernalia and it was a lot of it. So clearly it was a really high up person. And thus it was Hitler, you know? That's how the show was laid out. Which I thought was pretty silly. But as I was watching it, I could see how it would suck you in because you have the main characters who extremely believe what they're saying. And you could tell they're like really buying the BS. And so you're like, oh, I wonder. And then it's shot in a pretty professional way. So that also makes it hard to just write off as easily perhaps if it was just cheesily done. But then you have the other people who do more of the legwork. And they never come out and say, oh, this is clearly Hitler, right? The people who are actually doing the on-the-ground, like, research, archaeology, that kind of aspect, they don't ever say those things. It's the people who are in charge of the show who, like, will take some tiny thing and be like, obviously it's Hitler, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, those were my thoughts on that show. One of the other shows that we also watched was Vikings, which I'd heard a lot of good things about, and I have to say that I was impressed considering some of the other terrible shows that exist on this channel. Great production value, a little slow, but I think that for a history show, that's sort of to be expected. I thought it was cool because it made me want to look into the Vikings a little bit more because I feel like mostly what I know about the Vikings is from childhood. I mean, I am an American historian of the 19th century, definitely not Viking era. And I wanted to know if some of the stuff matched. And there had been some, you know, articles online about, you know, proving the truthfulness or the veracity of the claims on Vikings. And two of the things that stood out to me in the show was, first off, was the role of women. And I looked into a little bit, and it does seem to be true that women were very powerful in terms of their knowledge of, like, I guess, fighting and acting as warriors, if the case needed to be, right? And so that was interesting, and that was actually shown in the TV show, that the woman protecting herself in the first episode. And that struck me because it happened pretty early on. And then also, like, you see the power. It definitely feels like a very strong male and female characters. And sometimes I watch these shows and I think, this seems exaggerated. I really doubt women have this much power, but apparently in the case of the Vikings, it did. And then also, too, the show starts at the moment at which the Vikings are about to embark on their campaigns of, like, discovering the world, I guess is the best way to put it. And I thought it was an interesting moment to start the show, right? They start right before they've actually gone out with their boats and explored. And that's the Vikings we think about when we think about history. We think about Vikings exploring the world. So I thought it was interesting they started before that. So you get this feeling like the culture before they become this, like, worldly, global, I don't know, cosmopolitan community. And they show them as very closed off. And apparently I looked into that, and that isn't true. They did know and they did trade with other people. So they weren't as closed off as the show makes them seem. And I think it's to create, like, this very clear before and after situation. Which is usually, I think, is exaggerated on television. So that can be a little bit of a problem. But I think overall, those two aspects made the show really interesting to me and made me want to watch more of it. And I like the fact that it made me want to research more, which is what I hope TV shows like this could do for people.
Right, and it did seem like they inserted some, you know, historical bits into it, like emphasis on particular items they had, on different maybe types of clothing or the material culture to make it more believable, more like historically based, which I think is interesting. Mm-hmm. At least they didn't, you know, really decontextualize them. Yeah, put something modern in there.
They try to have real objects that were meant something to people, that people use, right?
Right.
They haven't had entire, I think there wasn't proof about one of them. The one about the early form of this, what is it, the sunstone to show navigation. Mm-hmm. But they do talk extensively about the boats, which are important. A huge part of Viking culture, right? So yeah, they do. They do talk about material culture. And then I think that they also base a lot of it on very clear writings that came out of the Viking era, which of course is because they had a lot of writing, you know, so it makes it easier to create a show.
And did you think, just one question, did you think that the writing of the show, that the dialogue was maybe more from that period? I mean, I know we can't really ever say that, but I've definitely seen shows where they sound like they're 20th century actors. and they talk with either slang or they talk
they
with...
They definitely didn't do that, because I've seen that and it's really awkward. I think it was some movie with Channing Tatum and I was like, no, stop talking like that. They said they tried to get them to do English with what do you call it? Nordic Norse? Accent.
Okay.
Because they said it's a version of old English, right? Or older English or something.
Mm-hmm.
One of the older Englishes. And so they thought about that. I was reading about that. They tried to find the right accent. Because they do have an accent. I tried to figure out what it was. And a lot of the actors are Canadian, which I was expecting them to be British. Because whenever you do old shows, they always use British actors.
That's always interesting. Mm-hmm. That I find increasingly a lot of Canadian actors in British or American shows either portraying one or the other. I don't know what that is. Maybe it's a very fluid
dialect. Maybe it's easier for them because they can do both accents.
Maybe, yeah.
I mean, they can do both accents well, and then they're always available for television since they have all those Vancouver. What are they film a lot of shows there? You know,
they do.
Because I guess it's cheaper or something. Everybody's in Vancouver filming, so that seems like it'd be a good place to film. But yeah, I noticed that. I looked into that too. There were a lot of Canadian actors.
Okay, so we're going to also talk a little bit about some of the reality shows, since that's the main amount of programming that comes into the History Channel. I took on the reality shows, two in particular, one called Counting Cars and the other one called Pawn Stars. And I got to admit, Pawn Stars is kind of one of my favorites. But it's interesting. I think both kind of look at history in the form of objects. Pawn Stars more than... material culture. Pawn Stars more so than Counting Cars. But basically the shows are about these two groups of businessmen. The Counting Cars is about this one businessman who is in the business of car restoration named Danny Coker. Him and his team buy and sell classic cars and kind of give a little bit of context to the cars themselves. The second group of the Pawn Stars is basically set in Las Vegas around Rick Harrison and his son and father and their business in the pawn industry. They basically buy and sell historic objects, different types of memorabilia.
How
and
historic do they have to be? Like, it should be really old or just
it's basically whatever people bring in. So, I mean, they've had stuff from the 16th century on down to Elvis... memorabilia. So
how present day does it go?
Well, they on the episode I watched, they brought in something from the 80s. They brought in something from, I think it was some sort of I can't even remember now. It was some sort of concert memorabilia, and so they tried to get a price on that. And so what they do is the people will bring in their objects, they kind of assess them, and if they don't have maybe the background in it, they will bring in an expert. Either someone from a local museum or someone just with experience with that type of item. So a firearms expert or sports memorabilia expert. And they'll discuss it's a little bit of its history and how much they believe it to be worth. And then Rick or his son Corey will offer a price. And so that was kind of interesting because it does kind of show you, you know, it gives you a little bit of insight into this historic material. But
yeah.
But it is, it's kind of, it
also
brings
what
up
it's worth, right? This idea that it's, you could buy it and sell it. I mean, we think about usually historical material is going into museums, right?
Right. And there's sometimes where I'm like, why are you selling it? Give it to a museum if it's that important.
But I could see how it would be something that people would be more interested in rather than buying and selling to a museum.
Right. Well, they have, you know, history has a price. They have a desire to make money off of it. And that kind of sometimes kills me. Like, they'll bring in these things that are just like, you gotta share this with everybody. I feel very, like, feels very Indiana Jones-ish. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know, like, hijacking history for a price. So that's kind of what I took away from these shows. They're very entertaining. I really do like Pawn Stars just because you get to see these things that somebody may have in a closet. Mm-hmm. Or that they inherited. But that's kind of what History Channel does look at. It's kind of taking these particular things out of their historical context and analyzing them, which mm-hmm. is important to do, but in a pawn shop?
Yeah, it's an interesting mix, I think, of shows. That shows a little bit about maybe perhaps the confusion that we feel about what history matters to us today. I mean, there's definitely an emphasis on, like we said in the beginning, on military shows. And I think that there's a certain amount of still fascination with our role in wars. There isn't as much about American history, which I find a little bit surprising. There's a little bit that I think one of the original roles that we thought history would play in society, which was to help people with their sense of citizenship. But now it seems more like history is about how much money you can make off the material cultural objects that might not have a place in museums. But perhaps even just learning more about them. I mean, it's a way to learn about them, I guess, by talking to the pawn people.
And they're experts.
And they're experts, right? And then also, I guess, like ancient societies that maybe we're fascinated by, right? Like the Vikings. Even if they're sometimes looked at through a really weird lens of like aliens, it's still a fascination with older society, but I think a wrong approach to looking at that. Maybe if they start going more in the Vikings direction and less in the alien direction, it would be a good direction for the History Channel.
Come on, History Channel. We know you can do better. Come on, we challenge you to do better.
I mean, you know, if Amazon and Hulu and all these ones can have all these really cool original programming, you guys can too.
Even AMC, come on. Like, Turn, like some of their other stuff they put out. Come on.
I mean, even if they even could just talk about why people have these weird conspiracy theories, I'd be into that. But not necessarily believing the conspiracy theories. So, there you go.
That is our discussion on the History Channel in a nutshell. Thank you for tuning in today. And we hope to hear from you on our Facebook page. Send us questions. And we will talk to you later.
Okay. Thank you, guys. Bye.